Welcome to SCOTUS Cast. On November 6, 2007, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the John R. Sand and Gravel Co. v. United States case. The court was asked to consider whether or not the Tucker Act's six-year statute of limitations is jurisdictional and thus may not be waived by the parties. In this episode of SCOTUS Cast, University of St. Thomas School of Law professor Gregory Sisk offers his own analysis of the case. As always, the Federalist Society itself takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Sisk.
This is Professor Gregory Sisk of the University of St. Thomas School of Law in Minnesota. I am also co-counsel for the petitioner in the John R. Sand and Gravel v. United States case that was argued before the Supreme Court this morning, November 6th. The issue raised before the Supreme Court in John R. Sand is one that only a lawyer could love. The question is whether the statute of limitations that applies to claims brought against the federal government in the United States Court of Federal Claims is jurisdictional. In other words, is this an ordinary statute of limitations, that is, an affirmative defense in a procedural time limitation that may be waived by the government, or instead is this a special subject matter jurisdiction rule, one that cannot be waived by the government and that the court must raise on its own, even if both the claimant and the government agree that the claim was timely filed? Despite what may appear to be a very technical and narrow question of law, the court's decision in John R. Sand may say very important things about the centrality of the plain language and contemporary legal understanding versus the importance of stare decisis in statutory interpretation. The case also raises important questions about whether those bringing claims against the government must not only show that Congress has consented to suit, but then must abide by procedural rules that are strictly construed in favor of the government, even to the point of being treated as absolute jurisdictional commands. To briefly outline the facts, this is a case alleging a physical taking of private property by the government for which just compensation is due under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. John R. Sand operates a sand, gravel, and stone quarry on land that it leases in Michigan. A landfill had been operated by the landowner in a corner of this leased land, which the Environmental Protection Agency later placed on its national priority list of hazardous waste sites. Beginning in the 1990s, the EPA took actions to remediate the site, putting up and then later taking down fences that temporarily restricted access by John R. Sand to parts of its leasehold. Then, in 1998, the EPA erected permanent fences that completely and permanently excluded John R. Sand from 42 acres of its leasehold property, including 15 acres of uncontaminated and easily mineable sand and gravel. 4 years later, in 2002, John R. Sand filed a suit seeking compensation for this taking in the United States Court of Federal Claims under a statute known as the Tucker Act. While the United States initially pled the six-year statute of limitations as a defense and argued that the claim had accrued in the early 1990s, after discovery, the government stipulated and the Court of Federal Claims agreed that the claim had not accrued until 1998 when the permanent fence was installed, a time period well within the six-year statute of limitations. On a later appeal to the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, the government attorney, when asked at oral argument, openly agreed that the claim had accrued within that six-year period and thus was within the statute of limitations. However, and only over a strong dissent, the Federal Circuit held that the statute of limitations was jurisdictional and thus could not be waived by the government. The Federal Circuit then held that the claim had accrued earlier when the EPA had temporarily interfered with John R. Sand's access to the site. The Supreme Court granted review on whether this statute of limitations, 28 United States Code Section 2501, is jurisdictional. Before the Supreme Court, John R. Sand contends that this statute of limitations, by its plain language and original meaning, is indeed an ordinary statute of limitations. The statute reads, quote, "Every claim of which the United States Court of Federal Claims has jurisdiction shall be barred unless the petition thereon is filed within 6 years after such claim first accrues. Thus, by its text, the statute assumes the jurisdiction already has been established before the time bar is applied. John R. Sand contends that this statute plainly separates the jurisdictional determination, which occurs first, and the timeliness inquiry, which comes afterward. In addition, when the predecessor to this statute was enacted in 1863, the legislative history shows that members of Congress expected this statute of limitations to apply to the government in the same manner as to private parties. And more importantly, the contemporary legal understanding was that a statute of limitations is a waivable defense. As the Supreme Court explained in its 2002 decision in Franconia Associates v. United States, Congress in 1863 had selected language for what is now Section 2501 from the typical state statutes of limitations of the period, and thus had adopted what the court called, quote, an unexceptional statute of limitations. Now, the government responds that a statute of limitations on a claim against the federal government should be regarded as a jurisdictional condition on the waiver of sovereign immunity, because Congress need not consent to any suit against the United States. When it does consent, other limitations and exceptions, including a statute of limitations, should be treated as defining the scope of that consent. For this proposition, the government relies on a series of cases, beginning with Kendall v. United States in 1883 and ending with Soriano v. United States in 1957. In those decisions, the Supreme Court stated that the statute of limitations for the then Court of Claims was indeed a jurisdictional and non-waivable matter. Thus, the government's primary argument in John R. Sand is one of stare decisis. But John R. Sand contends that this stare decisis argument comes nearly 20 years too late. In recent decisions dating back nearly 20 years, the Supreme Court has repeatedly rejected arguments by the government that statutes of limitations on government claims are jurisdictional or to be strictly construed. And instead, the court has ruled that statutes of limitations in government cases should be applied in the same manner as among private parties. In Irwin v. Department of Veteran Affairs in 1990, the Supreme Court rejected the government's argument that the time limitation for federal employees to file an employment discrimination claim under Title VII against the United States was absolute and jurisdictional. Instead, the court allowed that limitations period to be equitably tolled by the courts under exceptional circumstances. In Irwin, the court specifically noted that the Soriano decision was in conflict, but the court explained that it was abandoning the previous ad hoc approach to statutes of limitations in government cases, and instead was adopting a presumption that such statutes are subject to equitable tolling and should be applied in the same manner as among private parties. The Supreme Court has confirmed and extended the Irwin holding in other more recent cases, including the Franconia Associates case in 2002 and the Scarborough v. Principe case in 2004. So, depending, of course, on how this case is decided, what may be the importance, the meaning of the John R. Sand case? First, the decision should address the continuing question of how centrally the plain text and original understanding will play in the court's analysis and interpretation of a statute as contrasted with stare decisis in statutory interpretation decisions. The parties in John R. Sand have framed and organized the arguments before the Supreme Court in rather sharply contrasting ways. John R. Sand, both in its briefs and at the oral argument, highlights the plain language of Section 2501. We outline the history of the statute, including the contemporary legal context and understanding of how statutes of limitations were applied in 1863 when the predecessor statute was enacted. By contrast, the government leads off with precedent relying on the doctrine of stare decisis, as well as public policy arguments about protecting the public treasury. The government does not focus upon the text of the statute until about two-thirds of the way through its brief. The government argues that the Supreme Court has said for decades that Section 2501 is jurisdictional, and that Congress acquiesced in this understanding when it recodified Section 2501 in 1948. But when Title 28 of the United States Code was codified in 1948, Section 2501 was codified in a procedural chapter of the title, separate from the jurisdictional chapter that includes those provisions that grant authority to the Court of Federal Claims to hear certain types of claims. Thus, Congress doesn't appear so much to have acquiesced in as to have resisted a jurisdictional reading of Section 2501. Which approach the Court finds to be most persuasive in John R. Sand could send a message about how the Court approaches disputed questions of statutory analysis, as well as how advocates in the future should develop statutory arguments in their briefs and oral arguments. Second, the decision in John R. Sand may shed considerable light on the important and frequently arising question of how the Court should approach statutes that create causes of action for private citizens to seek relief in court against the federal government. How high is the hill that a claimant must climb to prevail in a lawsuit against the government, especially in a case like John R. Sand, in which the government's constitutional duty to pay just compensation for a taking of private property is at issue? Over the past quarter century, there has been a tension between two lines of Supreme Court decisions on interpretation of statutory waivers of sovereign immunity. The older line of decisions, exemplified by the Kendall and Soriano cases on which the government relies, treat statutes that set out the rules for suits against the federal government, including such ordinarily procedural matters as statutes of limitations, as conditions on the waiver of sovereign immunity. By this line of precedent, these statutes should be construed strictly in favor of the government, and elevated to the position of jurisdictional and non-waivable absolutes. Indeed, extended to its logical end, the government's argument would mean that every jot and tittle in every one of the dozens of statutes allowing suits against the government could be transformed into jurisdictional commands. The federal courts would be obliged sua sponte to raise, evaluate, and decide every element on an exhaustive, and perhaps exhausting, list of limitations, exceptions, and rules in such statutes, and even if the government is conceding the point. The other and more recent line of decisions, exemplified by the Irwin and Franconia cases on which John R. Sand relies, provides that once the government has consented to suit, other procedural elements in the statutes, and time limitations in particular, should be given an ordinary statutory construction. Under this approach, the question of whether sovereign immunity has been waived at all by a statute does remain a jurisdictional determination. But once Congress enacts that waiver, the Court then gives an ordinary read to the plain text of the statute, applies canons of statutory construction as with any other statute, etc. By this line of precedent, then, statutes of limitations in government cases should be understood and applied in the same manner as among private parties. In sum, John R. Sand contends, the doctrinal foundation for the early sovereign immunity cases that implied a jurisdictional limitation into a statute of limitation has been thoroughly eroded by the more recent decisions. In conclusion, here is the question as John R. Sand conceives it. When the government has thrown off the cloak of sovereign immunity by granting jurisdiction to the courts to hear claims against the government, and when, as here, the government has deliberately stripped away any objections by expressly conceding the timeliness of the suit, should the government later be permitted to slip the cover of immunity back over itself by clothing a statute of limitations with a jurisdictional label? We hope that this question compels a negative answer. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.